Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to NJSBA's Blog Talk Radio show, New Jersey's Education Forum, a show dedicated to creating a conversation among those of us in the education community and beyond on the education issues important to us involved in public education in New Jersey. A conversation that brings state leaders to you, and I hope that you all feel free to join in the conversation. My name is Ray Penny. I will be your host this afternoon. A couple of ground rules. First, we will not be using the chat room feature of the show today. And if you are interested in calling in, a few things you should know. To call in, you dial 1-347-989-8904, and then you press the 1 when you are ready to make a comment or ask a question. I do not have a switchboard operator today, so my switchboard does not tell me the name of the caller, just your phone number. So I will identify you by your last four digits of your phone number and your area code. The other thing I will do is ask you to do is, if you are listening on the phone line, turn your computer down because there's a delay and it's somewhat confusing. This is a special edition because our speaker couldn't be with us last Friday, but last Thursday, the Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee released Bill S-1872, better known as Opportunity Scholarship Act, from committee with an 8-5 vote. The 8-5 was bipartisan. Some Democrats and Republicans supported it, and the 5 negative votes were all Democrats. The Opportunity Scholarship Act is a voucher-like program that awards scholarships to either private or public schools to eligible low-income students attending a failing school district or failing school. I should note that this program is a pilot program, but it is a rather large pilot program. It should also be noted that the Assembly version of the bill will be discussed this Thursday, February 3rd, in the Assembly Commerce and Economic Development Committee, and that bill is A-2810. Today's guest, last Friday, we had Gordon McGinnis, former Assistant Commissioner of Education and State Senator, who opposed the Opportunity Scholarship Act, and he brought up some interesting points that I'll probably bring up today. Today we have with us Chris Emigoltz, Director of Legislative Affairs for the New Jersey Department of Education, to join us. Though Chris is relatively new to the Department of Education, he's not new to education. He served with the NJBIA, New Jersey Business and Industry, as the Director of Education and Workforce Development Policy. And early in his career, something I did not know, he was a teacher as part of the Teach for American program in Atlanta, Georgia. Chris, welcome.
Thank you very much, Ray. I look forward to chatting with you and hopefully talking to some of the School Board Association's members.
Okay. I should note ahead of time that NJSBA is opposing the Opportunity Scholarship Act, but I will set aside our feelings so that Chris can bring out his points for supporting the bill in the administration's point of view.
Chris, thank you, Ray. I just wanted to say, School Boards Association, for the members that are listening to this, is, while the NJDOE and some of the education reformers don't always agree with everything that School Boards Association believes, we know that it is a contributor to the education dialogue in the state and have many positive things to add, and there'll be things that we agree on and we'll work together on, and there'll be things that we can agree to disagree on and be professionals, and that's why we're always happy to talk to you and even talk to you about things that we might not see eye to eye on.
Okay, great. Thanks for that endorsement. Which brings us to my first question. Before we even get into the program and the details of the program, why do we need this bill?
I think we need, you could say why we need OSA, but also why we need school choice in general, and I'll hit both of those points. Number one, just choice in general. There's something I like to say about the urgency of school choice, the urgency of choice. Actually, Cory Booker, mayor of Newark last night at also an OSA event, called it the fierce urgency of now, is a phrase that he's used quite a bit, and I certainly can't take credit for that because he's a much better and polished speaker than I am. But the governor and the DOE and the education reform movement, we certainly do not believe that OSA or school choice is a silver bullet and it's going to solve everything immediately if OSA gets signed. But what it will do is we know there are a lot of programs that have been going on for years that have helped and improved some urban schools in New Jersey. But we also know that there are still some schools that are failing. They're failing the students that are in them. They're failing their communities. They're failing the taxpayers. They're failing the businesses that need those workers. And despite all of the federal Title I, ESEA, No Child Left Behind help, besides all of the good things that New Jersey has done from Republican to Democratic governors, there are still schools that are struggling and not providing the opportunities that their students need. So while we're working on improving public schools, because no one is bailing on the public school system that we have, but while we're doing that, there's nothing that we could do that will get those students out of a bad, troubled education quicker and more effectively than choice. The hope is that some of the educator effectiveness and tenure reforms and accountability reforms, standards, curricula reforms that the DOE has been and will be working on will help all students, urban, suburban, rural, rich, poor. But while those things are working, we know none of those things are going to change education tomorrow. Choice tomorrow, if choice happens, a student will be able to leave a failing school and find a school that's a better fit for them and their family. And we need more of those options. And those options are interdistrict public school choice. Those options are charter schools. Those options are vo-tech schools. Those options are scholarships in the form of the Opportunity Scholarship Act that could help a student find a better opportunity.
This program, how would it give us a basic overall as concisely as you can as to how you see it working for the Department of Ed? Because actually the Department of Ed is not the complete overseer of this program.
The Department of Ed actually is, yeah, you are 100% right. We're not necessarily going to be overseeing all aspects of this. The Department of Ed will probably have two primary roles with this. Is one, we will be overseeing what schools are eligible for accepting these scholarship students. And the legislature has amended the bill to make sure that the expression that we've heard is fly-by-night schools. We don't want to see any schools popping up just to make money off of these kids with no intention of actually giving them a better education, because that would not help the students, that would not help the public schools, that would not help any of the people that are stuck in these failing schools right now. We want to see quality options, and the governor said this over and over again, it's quality charter schools, quality choice. We don't just believe in choice for choice sake. So we will oversee this to make sure these schools meet some criteria that have been established in the bill, that they have history, that they have a curriculum, that they are prepared to educate the students they're going to accept. And number two is the students that are right now supposed to be eligible for the Opportunity Scholarship Act if the bill becomes law are the ones in failing schools within the identified school districts. And so the identified, I'm not going to read you a list, but so Newark is one of the identified school districts. Not every school in Newark is a failing school. If you meet certain criteria to be judged a failing school, and I actually think the criteria are, it's not easy to become a failing school. Those schools that are determined to be failing, the DOE will be looking at our test scores and we'll be getting that list to the scholarship organizations to sort of say, well, these are the kids that are eligible now for these scholarships.
I'm going to go over some of the points that Gordon McGinnis brought up, which I'm sure you've heard a lot of them already, but one of them was the cost of the program. Our understanding is that corporations, if they choose, will use this tax credit towards these scholarships instead of into the general fund, so that his issue was that it was too expensive a project at this time because it was taking money out of the general fund. So how would you answer that question?
I would say that, one, there is no expense to this program, to the state. The state of New Jersey, the opponents of the bill have said this will cost the state of New Jersey $1 billion, and they've turned it as a billion-dollar program. that's really to scare people, because the billion-dollar idea is a scary figure, especially when we know that in our economy we have had to make difficult cuts and we have had to do some things to many worthy programs that I don't think Governor Christie would have chosen to do if the economy was in a different place. But it's scaring people without actually having the facts. The program is actually revenue neutral to the state. It is done that way through a couple different ways, but number one is the state aid that goes to the districts where the kids leave. It will be done sort of in a per pupil way to make sure that if a scholarship student leaves a district, then that district will lose on a per pupil basis that scholarship, the cost of that scholarship. And so if there's going to be a let's say it's a $9,000 scholarship to go to a school, that $9,000 scholarship will be taken out of the state aid that would have gone to the district that normally would accept them. That $9,000 isn't all of the money that, let's just say Newark, for an example, gets from the state to educate their students. So in a way, on a per-pupil basis, if students start leaving Newark and taking these scholarships, Newark, on a per-pupil basis, will actually be spending more money per pupil after OSA students leave than they do now. And the way this happens is, let's say Newark is getting, just for argument's sake, we'll say 20 grand to keep it a round number. They're getting $20,000 per student, and only $9,000 leaves because that's the cost of one of the scholarships the state will provide. That means there'll be $11,000 left in the city of Newark not educating a student. So Newark will now have made $11,000 and lost a student. So when people talk about education funding, when people talk about how much New Jersey spends vis-a-vis other states, when they talk about how much school districts spend, when they talked about parity aid in the days of Abbott funding, all of those things, we talked about per pupil funding. We said, you know what, Abbott districts should be spending, I don't know whether it was $15,000 or $20,000 like the I and J district spent. Parity funding is often, per pupil funding is often the basis for a lot of those comparisons. The per pupil funding within those urban districts that might lose OSA students will actually go up because of the OSA. These districts will have more money per child to spend on hopefully improving themselves, so they're not losing these students to OSA, and they can compete because they might offer better math and science programs. Maybe they have more technology. Maybe they have more resources, more after-school programs. They have things that they can offer that will compete with what the public school districts outside of that district or private schools. It will in a way help them. And yet it's not going to cost the state any money, because since the state is recapturing that money, and most of the time, almost all the time, the OSA is cost less than half what the state is actually spending there, the state is keeping enough money, and then it's actually coming not from the state, it's coming from corporate donations, and the state is only losing the tax credits that they're giving up. And so in a way, the state is neutral. The districts are making money on a per-pupil basis, and then these students now have a chance to get a better education and find the education place that is most suited for them. So the money, I really think, and I think this has come up, I think it's a win-win for everybody.
So the money, we'll use your number, $20,000. If it costs $20,000 and they use $9,000 for the scholarship, the $11,000, does that remain with the district, or is that put in an escrow, or where is that money?
That remains, the DOE will figure out, that will remain with the district. When the DOE gives the district whatever aid allocation they are supposed to get in a given year, it's based on the students they have. And so if a scholarship student leaves, then the state will, recapture some of that money to cover the cost of that scholarship, which the state's not paying for the scholarship, but the state is having a little less tax revenue because of the tax credit because of that scholarship. So therefore, it's making up for that loss in tax revenue. So therefore, the state should be held harmless.
I'm going to move on to that, but I'll hold it. I have one other follow-up question, but I want to move on to something else. One of the other there were two other criticisms, and we'll deal with the first one is 25% of the grant money would be going to students already enrolled in a private school. So the feeling was, if you're trying to help the kids in the failing school, these kids are not enrolled already. So it's not really helping those kids. So what's your reaction to that part of the bill and criticism?
I think it's also somewhat misguided, because I think we know one of the reasons why I think it's hard to criticize that aspect of the bill is there is an income threshold in this bill. These scholarships will not be offered to students of families making $100,000 a year that are looking for just a way to not have to pay for the private school that they're going to go to anyway. So we're looking at lower-income New Jerseyans, and we all in New Jersey, whatever income level we are, we know that this is a very expensive state. So we know that there are families, I believe there were some families last week that testified in front of the Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee, that they are doing everything they possibly can to scrimp and save so that their son or daughter can go to a private school. And we also know that they're living, might be living paycheck to paycheck. Maybe they are already going to that private school. Maybe they figured out some way to do it. But if there's one crisis that happens in their family, if there's one catastrophe that happens in their house, if there's one paycheck that happens to get missed because their parent was sick or for whatever reason, then them going to that private school might be in jeopardy. And where would they go? They would be forced to go to, because that's where they live, they'd be forced to go to one of these failing schools. And I don't think we want to see students that are stuck in the failing schools leave, but then at the same time, because we know we live in an economy that is difficult today, where we're seeing an influx of all these kids from private schools to go back into the failing public school at the same time. We wouldn't want to see people passing each other on the way to and from these failing schools. It's not helpful for the state. It's not helpful for the children. It's not helpful for the family. So I think this gives those students the opportunity, ensures those students continue to have the opportunities that their parents have worked very, very hard for. And no one's taking advantage of the program. These are not upper-income students that are going to be going here and basically saving their parents' money that they would have spent anyway. These are helping parents that are at the cusp of not being able to do this for their children, and we want to support that.
The other criticism that he had brought up is that it really is not going to help even those kids who get the scholarship, because the academic achievement for most kids who leave the take a grant like this and go to either a private school or a charter school. He said studies indicate that they have the same academic achievement. Do you believe that?
Well, I do not believe that at all, but I don't even want to. There are studies that we can find that will say how it's a slam dunk that they're going to be getting a better education in these private schools. There are studies that we can find that will show that it's mix, and there will studies that we can find that may show something else. But even moving away from the studies, the DOE today, and I think this is one of the most important things that I could possibly say, is that we're moving to a situation where we're focused on children. We're focused on what's best for children. We're not looking at the education system as helping adults. We're not looking at the education system as maintaining institutions. We're looking at it as we want to do everything possible to focus on what's best for the children. And if you're thinking about what's best for children, giving them an option to go to the school that may be better suited for a variety of reasons to their families and their children's need, it's a no-brainer. When you start thinking about the adults and start thinking about the system, I can understand why some people are worried about this program, but that's no longer our primary concern, is what's best for adults. It may have been in the past, but it's not anymore. And when you're focused on what's best for children, it becomes a lot more easy to see why this makes sense. There may be students that there's a math and science program or technology program that might be more conducive to their needs. Maybe they're advanced and gifted in a particular area, like they want to be an engineer, and there might be a private school that might be able to provide what they need. We don't want to discourage that. We want to encourage things like that, because that's what's going to prepare them for the future workforce, prepare them for what they want to do in college. There might be a school that has an art program. Well, the public school doesn't have the art program that meets their needs. There might be a school that has a certain program that has a foreign language that is not available in the public schools. We want to encourage students to find the school and the education and the opportunities that best meet their needs. And right now that isn't happening across the board. And so there's something about choice that let's give the parents and the children, let's trust them to figure out what's best for them so they're going to prepare for the future workforce, prepare for all that awaits them after they graduate high school in the best way possible.
One of the other criticisms, and focusing on children is the criticism, I'm sure you've heard it, is that this only helps a few kids, and the kids who are left, so to speak, will have less resources, so it's not helping the majority of kids, and we should be working at helping the majority of kids in that school. But the feeling is when you take these kids away, and there's a belief that some of these might be the smartest kids from the school district, that the rest will have less resources, financial resources, to provide the education, so it will not improve their lot. And in fact, it could make it worse. So what would your response be to that?
Well, a couple of reactions. Number one, I already mentioned about the funding issue, that these districts will have more money to spend on the students they have left after these scholarship students leave than they do right now. And so saying that it will actually hurt the resources they have is an argument that that's not supported by the facts and how the bill works. Number two, the not even talking about resources in terms of money, but resources in terms of time, if the school figures out how to shift and focus their resources and gear them for maybe what they're lacking and gear them, you know what, if a school in Trenton starts seeing that its students start leaving and going to a particular type of school that might have a certain type of program or certain type of resource, then maybe that school might realize, you know what, we are not meeting our children's needs, and we can start shifting those resources, shifting our educators' focus. The principals and the teachers can work on a new course or a new after-school program or something that will address that new competition they now have. And I know some people don't agree with the fact that the competition might actually help everybody, but I think there is something to the fact that if right now people must go to the school that they live in, and people that don't have the income and resources to get out of that school are kind of stuck. I think if you change that dynamic and people aren't stuck anymore in certain schools, those schools might realize, you know what, we have to meet the needs of the parents in the community. We need to listen to what our families around our school's neighborhood are saying, or else we could lose these kids. And hopefully that increases the dialogue, increases the community involvement, increases the reaching out. And all of that will benefit, I hope it benefits the public school students as well as the private school students. But I think if this bill ever gets signed into law, it will be, I said win-win before, but I can't say that enough. I mean, it's meant to help everybody. I mean, there's been a lot of misinformation out there that this is just undermining public schools. This is just a way to privatize all education. It's like no one is bailing on public schools. No one is giving up on the good things that some New Jersey schools are doing. But we know that some New Jersey schools aren't working. So we want to figure out how to help the students now in those schools at the same time as figuring out how to help all the students that are left over in those schools. Because there's no one we're prioritizing more or prioritizing less. And then to say that we shouldn't do something that will help a few students unless we can do something that helps all students, I mean, I think that's, and to say it bluntly, I think it's a silly argument. I think, and again, just as I kind of quoted Mayor Booker before, but I think Reverend Jackson said that.
Quote Reverend Jackson.
Yes, Reverend Jackson has said it well. I mean, would somebody have told Harriet Tubman that if she couldn't save all the slaves at once in the Underground Railroad, should she have saved none of them? I mean, I think that's kind of silly. And, yeah, you knew exactly where I was going with that.
Well,
right?
I used it last week.
So. That stuck with me quite well. But, I mean, I think it's a legitimate argument. I mean, look at all of the things that we throw at our public schools. We don't know what works, but we know that some may work. And some. I think you can make a very good argument that There are some things in the Federal Elementary Secondary Education Act. It's gone by different names. Now it's No Child Left Behind. If it gets reauthorized, it might be something new. But there are aspects of that over the years that I'm sure have helped certain schools with Title I monies and other parts of that law. But there are probably parts that have not done enough in certain urban school districts. Then I'm sure you could look at other things the state of New Jersey has done, such as our charter school law, such as our interdistrict public school choice pilot program that just recently became permanent and is going to expand to new districts soon. I'm sure those things have helped some students. I'm sure I know that the aid that came from the Abbott v. Burke decision and the parity that happened between what the INJ districts were spending and what the urban districts in that decision were spending, that definitely helped some students. Preschool, I'm sure, has helped many, many students. There's research that shows some of the things that we've done have worked, but we also know some of the things that we've done have not. So are we supposed to say we shouldn't have done preschool because it didn't fix everything? Are we supposed to say we shouldn't have done Abbott because it didn't fix all the schools? Are we supposed to say that we shouldn't have done any Title I money ever because it hasn't helped everybody and hasn't fixed it? No. I mean, there's things that it's a very difficult and complicated problem that we have in educating all students, not just the easier-to-educate ones. And so we need to try everything we can to fix it because we owe the students in New Jersey that are right now not getting that education the efforts. We owe them that we're going to do everything we can.
I'm going to move on to the Opportunity Scholarship Board, but I see we do have a question from a caller. Area code 314, which I don't know. With cell phones, I'm not really sure. The last four digits are 4644, so I'm not going to know your name. I'm going to be calling you in a couple of seconds. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. How are you guys doing? I'm calling from the Midwest, matter of fact, Missouri.
How
are
you
really?
Doing?
And I really appreciate your conversation. And, you know, I have worked in, you know, urban schools for quite some time trying to make changes, particularly African-American schools. And I hear you talking about the scholarship bill. And they try to do the same thing here in the St. Louis area. And some of the organizations that's heavily supported by the teachers union, not only the state teachers union, but also even your national teachers union like the AFT and NEA, NAACP, for instance, came out against these programs.
They're doing in New Jersey too. So
yeah, you're not alone out there in Missouri.
Yeah, they will come against these programs basically because they are supported by those unions. And you know, it's a funny thing. The parents, you know, a school district should, what that school district, the direction that that school district goes, should be based on the local concerns. Not the state, and surely not the federal government. And what I see is that when you have parents who do come out and make efforts to change things, what happens is that these school teachers unions, especially at the national level, make donations to the state legislatures and even the federal legislatures, and they're not there to champion the cause of the parents. They're there to champion the cause of those who are putting money in their pockets, and that's totally wrong. And I agree with the gentleman. Public schools are needed, but there's a lot more needed than them. And in today's global workforce, today's global markets, no one entity will be able to provide a student with everything that he or she needs in order to compete in that market. And giving the parents the ability to, you know, make these choices is excellent. You know, if you in polls where
so
African
Americans, you're a supporter of this New Jersey version of this.
Oh,
bill?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm supportive.
And may I'm going to ask you. What was your name? I'm sorry, I didn't get your.
My name is Pianki.
Oh, okay.
Pianki.
Okay. I'm going to put you on hold. Do you have any question for Chris specifically on how this
works?
Yeah,
and Chris, can you explain to me how does it actually work? I wondered, is this the type of bill that if a business decide to sponsor a child, that that amount of that sponsorship can be deducted from their state taxes?
Yeah,
I'm going to put you on hold, but you can still hang on, hold on and listen, okay, to Chris's answer.
Yes, that is how it works. What happens is a business will donate to a scholarship organization, a nonprofit scholarship organization, a certain amount of funds, and then there will be 100% tax credit for however much they donate from what they owe the state of New Jersey in business taxes. And the idea is that that will then encourage these donations, and so that the businesses, again, that win-win where there is now money to pay for these scholarships. There's now students that are getting a better education that ultimately may go back and work for that business someday, and that business is not necessarily getting off of anything. I mean, they're spending that money, whether it's going to the state of New Jersey or whether it's going to these scholarship organizations. Business is not going to get a break. They're actually just now, I guess, guiding their taxes to this very worthwhile endeavor. And at the same time, the state of New Jersey is held revenue neutral because they're no longer going to be spending state aid in the same to the same extent as they were in the past to the districts where the students left. So again, that state wins, business wins, student wins, and the New Jersey taxpayers are not basically spending any money on this program because the state is held neutral.
Get into Pianchi. We want to know how it worked. There's the bill creates an opportunity scholarship board, which oversees this program. How do you envision? I know that we still have to flesh that out a little bit, but how does that the concept work?
Can you elaborate a little more on the question?
The opportunity scholarship board that's supposed to oversee where the governor appoints someone, and then the other two were with the advice and consent of the Senate. And Senate President and the Assembly Speaker, do they look at and they create regional boards? I wasn't really sure how that worked out in terms of do they help select, set the criteria for who's selected as a student?
Yeah, the boards, the one board will then have a scholarship organization that they choose in each of the regions of the state, North, South, Central, and the scholarship organizations can at most use use a small portion of these tax credits to sort of fund their operations to make sure that the taxes, the scholarships are going to the schools that they're supposed to go to, that the residents of the neighborhoods where there are failing schools are going to know all about the opportunities they now have. Just to make sure the program is implemented as efficiently and effectively as possible, that's why the program will spread out to the whole state, not just be focused in one place. That's why you have sort of oversight by one board looking at these three different organizations. And obviously, I'm sure they'll be working together. There's some aspects of the bill to sort of make sure that the funds are used as efficiently as possible. But sort of that's the gist. It must be nonprofit 501c3 tax exempt organizations, and with that comes some degree of oversight. There's a few other oversight mechanisms in the bill, but if everything's done right, you will never hear about these organizations, and basically there'll be money coming from businesses that will fund these scholarships that will go right out to the families that most need them, and then those families will be in schools that will be better educating them, and then we'll be better for it. So, I mean, I think we just needed some sort of this. The state, if this is done, just needs some sort of mechanism to implement it as efficiently and effectively as possible, and that's what these scholarship organizations and board will do.
So are these, they're not, for the most part, paid. There are a lot of volunteers on this, or is this it'll be a new nonprofit used by...
See it work in a variety of ways. I to say that I know exactly how it will work, I think I don't think anybody does right now, but the bill will make sure that nothing will be improper. There are some safeguards in there, and I don't think anybody can become rich off of the administrative expenses that this board and these scholarship organizations will have. I think there are ways just, again, to make sure that the program is implemented as well as possible.
My understanding is that there's if there's too many applicants for a school, they have to, a private school, say in Newark, that they have to go through a lottery process.
If
they have 100 seats available, or excuse me, and they have 120, they just do a lottery. Is that my
yes, that is similar. It's very similar to what happens in charter schools, where charter schools, if they're in neighborhoods where there are failing schools, everybody's trying to get to the charter school, because for whatever reason, again, the allowing choice to work, these choices work better for the parents than the school that they are otherwise stuck in right now. And so many charters have lotteries because they have more people than they could accept apply, and I would imagine this might be the case with this bill, because if students are in schools that aren't working for them, they're going to find another option that does work for them.
I was asked, and maybe you can clarify this, they also have the option of using this money towards another public school if they so choose.
Yes.
Is that correct? But that other public school would have to say, the board would have to say, we're accepting students. We have space and we're accepting
students.
Yes,
both
students.
Actually private schools and public schools. No one will ever be forced to accept this this scholarship. Maybe a school board might choose to, because if they realize in the way they fund their schools that they've already paid for overhead expenses, that they have the teacher, they've got the classroom, they've got the utilities paid for, and there are, I don't know, a couple extra seats in that class, they might realize that it's worthwhile to open it up to OSA students in the district next door, or OSA students anywhere. Might be right for the students to give them an opportunity. Maybe if they're proud of the great programs that public school has, and we have a lot of great public school programs throughout the state, there's no reason why they might not want to open it up to other students. And it actually could make money for their school district, such as other interdistrict choice has been looked at that way and has been utilized that way by some school district.
So it'd be the
but,
same
yeah,
type
private
school
schools
district,
will also,
a district that has space and says, we'll take 5 students and we don't really need to hire any new staff. We have this space.
Yeah, and they could realize some sort of net savings to their property taxpayers of their district, and actually help out scholarship students in a town next door where schools might be struggling or not doing as well as their towns are. So it's a possibility. I have no idea if districts will take advantage of it, just like we don't know why only, I think, 15 or 16 counties took advantage of the interdistrict choice pilot program when it was a pilot. But we've now had 72 apply now. I don't know why it wasn't more than 72. I don't know why some of those did. I mean, districts have lots of financial and other reasons as to why this would be a good or bad idea for them, but it's a possibility, and we wouldn't want to exclude that possibility, which is why we allowed it in the bill. But, yeah, no district will be ever forced to take scholarship students, and no private school will ever, too. I mean, the one thing about this, and some people have criticized, that money's not enough for some private schools to take students. It might not cover the tuition for some of our prep and more expensive private schools in the state. But if one of those private schools wants to participate and, again, thinks that they already paid for the overhead, they've already covered their fixed costs, and they think they can make money and actually help students by opening a few seats up, that wouldn't be a bad idea. But they would have to take that. Scholarship would be payment in full. No student that has a scholarship will be asked to subsidize that with a couple extra $1,000 that their family will have to find. I mean, the scholarships will be payment in full for whatever school wants to accept them. That might be enough for some schools. It might not be.
That's a good point for you to be making, I guess, because I think the assumption is that if the tuition's $15,000 and they only have 10, the parents don't have to put out, or parents or guardians don't have to put up the extra 5. This is to pay for it in full. So
yes.
But some of the private schools, I understand, do have scholarships. So
yeah, some of them have scholarships and might figure out maybe how these scholarships and the scholarships they have, maybe they can combine to cover the cost, and they could use this. And I'm sure not all of the sort of elite private schools that we're blessed to have in New Jersey. I mean, it's a good thing having some of the elite resource heavy schools that we have. It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing that they're another choice for certain students that can afford them. And if some of them want to open it up to students that might not traditionally be able to afford them, but because of the scholarship can, then that would be great.
I have a couple other points. We're getting towards the end.
No problem.
There's an interesting clause with special education students that some people have criticized because it takes some of the burden off. But if a special ed student has an IEP in the public school and is in that failing district, if they want to go to use this voucher, they have to waive some of that. Is my understanding correct?
Because the private school is not a waiver, I also think is somewhat incorrect. They would have to acknowledge that private schools, because this doesn't change anything, and that's why waiving something that they actually didn't have anyway is an incorrect way to say it as waiver. But I think some people have said it's a waiver because they want to get more attention to the issue. I think right now there are parents that I'm sure are looking at choices for their students, and some of those choices don't have to meet all of the special ed requirements that traditional public schools do. And they might look at their options. They might weigh their options. They might realize in the best interest of the child, it might be that private school that might not have to do all of the special ed programs and compliance that the public school has to do. They might realize that there's no place that could be better for my son or daughter than that public school and all the special ed resources that they will provide. That's something that a parent currently has the choice to make. Private schools currently don't have to do everything that a public school has to do regarding special ed. We're not changing that in this bill. There's nothing being proposed to change that. That's a fact of life, but we just want to make sure. It's actually, I think, the opposite of how some people look at this, and all we're asking people to give up their rights. We're actually informing people of their rights. It's actually, I think, a benefit to parents that clause is in the bill, because otherwise parents actually might jump at this program and not realize that, you know what, there are some times where public schools might be the best setting for their students because of their special education needs or because of any other needs. I mean, no one's saying, again, I've said this before, no one's saying that this bill will magically cure all and this is the silver bullet that will solve all education problems in the state of New Jersey. But for many, many students, this bill will give them the opportunity that they so desperately need to get the opportunities that they've been lacking in college, in the workforce, just to get the education that they should have anyway. I think that's – thank you for bringing that up, Ray. I think it's a very good thing to clarify, because it purely is a clarification, and it's purely making sure parents know what their rights are and knowing what private schools have to do and what public schools have to do. I think informing people of what their options are is only a good thing. We're not taking away anybody's option. If they realize that this school might not meet all of their son or daughter's special ed needs, then it might not be the best choice for them, but it might be the best choice for somebody else.
One final question. What do you think will happen with the bill? Do you think it'll pass?
Well,
because I know you're pretty good at judging these things.
I don't want to speculate on that, because ultimately it's whatever the governor thinks is best, and I hope that the governor has the opportunity at some point to have a chance to sign a bill that will increase the choices for students out there. But I don't want to speculate on if there's more amendments to the bill, if the bill is going to get to the governor's desk in the exact form that he wants. The governor, working with the legislature, I hope that he has the opportunity to sign a bill that will expand choice in the way that he wants. And that would be a good thing for the students in New Jersey. That would be a great day in the history of the state of New Jersey if that ever happens. But I hope it is. We're seeing some momentum with this bill. We're seeing many people in the legislature from all around the legislature, suburban, urban, Democrat, Republican,
I'm going to have to
all
cut
getting
you off
behind this bill, and hopefully something gets to the governor's desk that will be what he wants.
We have only a few seconds left. Chris, I want to thank you for joining us. I hope to have you on again.
Thank you, Ray.
and I'd like to thank everyone for listening. And that brings us to the end of New Jersey's Education Forum. I hope you join me. The next show will be Friday, February 11th, and the issue will be charter schools, something that Chris is familiar with. And thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you, Ray.